studies. And the terminology kind of shifts from, oh, you know, these people, we wish they wouldn't do that, and they're bad guys, and you know, so there's this rift. But then the other group becomes cockroaches, dehumanized, right? Dehumanized. And once the other group is dehumanized, everything's fair game, right? It's not murder anymore. They're just animals. We think of animals, we don't generally think of cockroaches, but cockroaches are kind of disgusting, right? And what do when there's a cockroach? Well, you want to step on it, kill it, whatever, get the chemicals out, whatever it is, to just exterminate them. That's what you do with cockroaches. And so this whole idea of not only our words and being really careful about our words, and then being aware of how contagious this fervor can be. And that goes back to the quote that I read to you. How contagious this quote can be is found. The words are here in this chapter and in Jeff's book, the actual violence. And in James, it is chapter 4. From where come wars and rumors of war among you? Come they not here? From all this misuse of this tongue. So anyway, if you get a chance this week, because of what we're doing with speech and what we're doing with contagion of violence, Karen, where do they find this? Amazon Prime or something? Netflix somewhere? Hotel Rwanda. You'll see these very things acted out. Okay, so go for that. Don't miss that. So, and the point is, as this movie opens, and there's, it just opens with this talk, but the talk just escalates. And when the talk escalates, it's a really short step between talk radio and genocide. Talk radio and genocide. And it's on both sides, okay? Make no mistake, it's on both sides. But we're here trying to deal with who we are, and basically the Christian coattails in America of what's left. How is it that we are going to respond to the oppression that is coming our way? Y'all with me on that? No. All right. So he's going to talk about the tongue here. And he's, you know, I've chose this one section here to bless or to curse. And he talks about, you know, a forest can be, the tongue is like a fire. And, you know, I won't read that whole thing for us here, but our tongue is this little member, but it's so powerful and it can do all these tremendous things. And it should end up having an integrity, meaning at the end of this one segment here, he's saying that, you know, your tongue shouldn't bring forth fresh water and salt water, right? You shouldn't. Out of the same mouth, there shouldn't be blessing and cursing. So here James undoubtedly intends to communicate the terrifying, destructive power of the tongue. The power of the tongue is compared to a small fire. And in the ancient world, just this would have rang true perhaps more for them than us. In ancient cities, the houses were built on top of one another. Lots of places in the world where that's still true, but and they are usually built out of wood. You know, there wasn't so much brick. There wasn't so much steel. There wasn't so much of those that are non-combustibles, but they were wood. Turn to the next page here. James is also emphasizing the tiny size of the tongue in contrast to the destruction it can cause. A tiny flame, all it takes is one match, and it can destroy a city. Anybody remember the Great Chicago Fire? I mean, I think the rumor is, and again, that's 100 years ago, and the construction is still the same. Chicago's pretty densely populated with houses right next to each other, generally wood, and somebody tips over a lantern in somebody's barn, right? The hay starts on fire, the whole city is destroyed. So, being really careful about our tongue. In James 3 and 6, James argues that the tongue is not only a fire, but it's a world of unrighteousness, and it stains the whole body. I mean, maybe you've had this experience. Did you ever say something and you know you said the wrong thing, and you can just feel the whole thing? Right? What gunk? Why are you laughing? All right, so he's... So this comes from unrighteous speech, rather. It comes from worldly speech. Our first inclination is to identify profanity and obscenities to this world of unrighteousness. It is far more likely that James's warning, that is, it is directed primarily against the danger of worldly speech patterns corrupting the life and church. Gossip, slander, other kinds of malicious and manipulative speech. You know, when somebody says somebody else is a cockroach, there's a manipulation going on there, right? And they are a far greater threat than just a dirty word. Now, dirty words sometimes bring more fire, right? They're incendiary, they get our attention. But he's saying that those other manipulative things are even worse. And so James ends up saying that our true religion is this meekness of wisdom. There's mercy here. You really do everything you can to be sincere and impartial. And the community of God's people, that's us, we should be rejecting the worldly patterns of speech that embraces the speech ethics that James prescribes. And again, a little bit later on here, and I don't even know if we'll get to this, but our last cycle out, and one of the things that people really, who liked President Trump, really liked President Trump about and for, is that he pushed back. And I can remember listening to Rush Limbaugh. Rush Limbaugh says, this is what pushback looks like. And he would describe what Trump was doing. And Trump would be rude, demeaning, cursing his enemies, you know. So I'm not a fan of the way that Trump conducted his speech. And I think it was very dangerous. I continue to think that it's dangerous. But my argument with Rush Limbaugh was always this. Pushback doesn't have to look like that. Yes, it was pushback. And we all got so tired of being doormats and no one pushing back at all that we would accept any form of pushback. And I'm here caution us again. And I'm not saying President Trump is not redeemable. I would like nothing better than for him to be redeemable in terms of his speech. Okay? But I think his policies generally were pretty good, generally. And a whole lot better than what we have now. But I think he was following a worldly pattern of how to communicate that. And it was very destructive. Very destructive. But Rush Limbaugh always used to say that, hey, this is pushback. And this is what pushback looks like. And my point is, don't ever swallow that whole scale. There's no one cookie cutter that just because somebody's pushing back means that it's righteous. I've said this before. Who more than Barabbas was pushing back against Romans, against how much the Jews were just laying down in front of the Romans? Barabbas was pushing back, but pushing back didn't have to look like that. So here we are heading into another election cycle, and I think God would have us be very careful what our pushback looks like and what it sounds like. In verse 6, James begins to apply the danger of unrighteous tongue to the corporate situation of the church. And this is for our well-being here and that we would have peace. At the bottom of this page, he's got a really important point here. He says, James' warning here should be taken soberly, but not only for our own individual judgment on the last day that is at stake when we open our mouths, okay? But for the vitality of the whole of the people of God of which we are a part. If nothing else will bridle our tongues, then our love for our neighbor ought to do so. And so, okay, I'll use Mike for an example. Mike blurts out something, okay, that he now feels stained about. The other person probably feels stained about it too. But you know what? It goes farther than that. Because all of us become a part of that. Solomon has a different way of saying this. He says, Solomon says that a word fitly spoken is like apples of gold in pitchers, the old King James says, settings of silver. It's just right. It's perfect. Before we speak, do we reckon with the day of judgment? Not only individually, but am I well representing? Am I bringing about this harvest of righteousness in the peaceful kingdom? You know this passage in James where he talks about, you know, everything's been tamed, but the tongue cannot be tamed, right? Meaning not by a human anyway, right? So that's what the next paragraph is about there. Our tongue needs to be tamed by God. We need to become more like Jesus, who bridled his tongue, right? Isaiah, remember this. He speaks about Isaiah portraying the Messiah. And one of the things that Isaiah goes out of his way to talk about is how much the Messiah would bridle his tongue. Go on to the next page. Remember what it says? He was oppressed. He was afflicted. Oh, yeah. Kathy Hochul's doing a lot of bad things to us. So is Joe Biden. Yet he opened not his mouth. Like a lamb that was led to the slaughter, like a sheep before her shears is silent. So he opened not his mouth. You know what? We don't have to yell and scream about every offense. This is not about us never saying anything. Okay, let's not go there. But you know what? We don't need the daily outrage. The point of calling this, and Jeff clarifies here, is not to encourage us to a stoic approach to suffering in his followers. Rather, it is to underscore the way in which Jesus succeeded where Adam failed, by taming his tongue and not stumbling in what he said. Jesus is the mature man who is able to bridle his whole body. And he does it for us too, the church. We're his bride, right? He was the mature Son of God. More about maturity on that very same page there. And our maturity really is revealed to the world by the way we talk, by our righteous speech. When we bridle our tongue the way that Jesus did, we are bringing the kingdom of God to earth, and we are bringing the rule of Jesus. And again, if we can bridle our tongue, we can bridle our whole body. Can you imagine if we could bridle our whole body and our tongue? If all the Christians in America could do that, what a better place it would be, right? Let's turn the page here. Again, Jesus is succeeding where Adam failed. James is then going to talk about the whole incongruity of the tongue, right? Out of the same mouth. You know, one minute you're speaking like Jesus, or the next minute you're speaking like Barabbas. Out of the same mouth come blessing and curse. My brethren, these things ought not so to be. Angry speech and cursing are the natural human reaction. No one's saying this is easy. Perfectly natural. When we get poked, we want to poke back. I'll push back. The ancient society was no exception to that rule, even today, and I put more so today. When someone threatens our comfort or our dignity, we easily lash out against them. And we have the temptation to bitterly curse their oppressors. Must have been the temptation they had must have been overwhelming to bitterly curse their oppressors. And yet James refuses to condone this type of speech, even under some of the worst imaginable conditions, right? Why does James condemn so strongly the cursing of human beings? Well, we're made in the image of God, all of us, right? We don't want to get to a point where someday we turn on talk radio and the other side is being referred to as cockroaches. We are to declare God's blessing on all of creation. And if we can just get out of the gospel presentation, at least since the 16th century, we've had this, it's all about soteriology. It's all about the state of the individual soul. But God is saving the whole world. He's transforming the whole world. So if we can get out of just that whole, the whole idea of it's only about the there and then, and think about what God is trying to do in the transformation of the whole of the world. Our speech is a part of that. And we're bringing about the transformation of the whole world. He goes back to Abraham and the whole idea of blessing and all that. Making his name great, making God's name great. More and more and more about that. Last paragraph down. As the Church of Jesus, the true offspring of Abraham, we are both the benefactors and the participants in the promise of God that he is going to bless the nations of the earth. And so, love your enemies. Do good to them who hate you. Jesus commands his church to bless their oppressors. And in doing so, they maintain God's initial creational blessing of mankind. Affirm his intention to bless all the nations of the earth and enact his blessed promise for all men. Conversely, when we do the other thing, when we're cursing them, we are basically showing our unbelief in his ability and his promise to redeem and renew all things by our lack of obedience to tame our tongue. Now, a true postmillennialist will be far more patient with the hiccups we find and the irritations we find ourselves in. God's transforming the world. Okay? Maybe we might have a worldview that says, well, the last 200 years have been two steps forward for the gospel and for Western civilization. And now, the last 100 years is one step backward. A true postmillennialist will see that as a net gain, one step forward, instead of being outraged about the one step backwards. All right, I have this middle section here. Often Jesus commands us to love our enemies, has been understood as simply being nice, right? We're not going to talk about that. Not a false meekness and passivity in the church that Jesus never intended. When James rebukes his readers for cursing men who intend evil upon them, he does not rebuke them for their intention to defend your family. Okay? We're not saying don't do that. Rather, he rebukes them for defending them using the same weapons as the men who were persecuting them. For when we participate in God's plan for the world, we are not left defenseless. Rather, we will possess the gates, right? Shout, for the Lord has given you the city. We come to worship, and we expect these institutional walls that are ungodly and that are evil to crumble. Those are part of the tools that God has given to us. So all of this stuff is not just I'm already on page 227 here now, not a sentimental pledge, right? But it's the promise of justice prevailing ultimately. A It's intimately linked to his declaration that the cowardly, the faithless, the detestable, the murderers, right? They're all going to be destroyed. Middle of that page, his command is, it's not a command to passively accept whatever evil is meted out to them. It's just the affirmation that we are to bless our enemies, enact the promises of God for the world, and hasten the day of judgment against all his and our enemies. Our blessing is like a battering ram against the gates of hell. Instead of continuing the spiral and the cycle and the contagion of violence, we're breaking it. Bless our enemies. So this is going to lead us to something that's familiar to us near the bottom of page 227 here. Let me just start at that beginning of the last paragraph. Although it may seem counterintuitive, one powerful way in which we bless our enemies is by asking God to judge them. As we noted earlier, God judges someone. It may lead to the person's death and destruction. But God also saves through judgment. So we have to remember that. You know, our Thursday night, more and more, we're recognizing, okay, imprecatory psalms are our prayers. In fact, the Lord always saves through judgment. Praying that the Lord would judge our enemies is not to curse them, but to ask God to administer his promised justice, either by removing them or converting them. We've heard that language before. There's a world of difference between cursing someone and petitioning God. Remember, vengeance is mine, saith the Lord. As upset as you may be about whatever XYZ person is doing, God has offended more, violated more than you've been violated. The Lord has given us models for such prayers. Unfortunately, these prayers for judgment against our enemies, Jeff doesn't like the name imprecatory because imprecation is a curse. We're not really cursing these people, but we're asking God to administer justice. Okay? And I put there as an example for us, and I won't read it here. But, I mean, you look at Psalm 58 and you look at some of these lyrics, and it's like, wow. I mean, imagine if we all just drove up to Northway, say, Northway Church. Right? That's this one next. These lyrics are just like, wow. We're just asking God for. Psalm 7 has it. Psalm 109 has it. You're probably familiar with that one. Let another man take his office. It's kind of like a psalm of prophecy about Judas, right? It wasn't really about Obama when people were praying it then, let another man take his office. Although we wouldn't mind that having taken place either. So it frees us, and this is the point. When we bring these petitions to the Lord, it frees us from resentment and the temptation to exact our own retribution against those who have wronged us. So if you're in this tribe over here and you've been wronged by that tribe over there, you appeal to God. Instead of petitioning God to act against their enemies and waiting patiently for him to act, the leaders are spewing curses and publicly inciting violence, violent action against their enemies. And all this leads us to this whole idea of integrity. What are we supposed to be doing with this tongue here? Okay? From the same mouth come blessing and cursing. That ought not to be. Right? Not fresh water and salt water, not a fig tree bearing olives or a grapevine producing fruit. Neither can a salt pond yield fresh water. Throughout the epistle, there's this whole idea of being a doer of the word and not hearer only. So there is an integrity in our actions. Now he's saying, let's back up here, because the root of this here is in our mind, in our heart, and what's in the heart comes out of the mouth, right? Out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. And so we want this integrity in our heart, so we'll have integrity in our tongue. And it's just like the integrity of faith and works, which was the topic of our Sunday school last Sunday. Integrity of faith and works together. Now it is the integrity of our tongue. When we bless God, we express our trust in Him, and our works of love toward Him must match that professed trust. Just as the fig tree does not bear olives, or a grapevine produce figs, nor a salt pond fresh water, a man or woman who is united to Jesus cannot engage in speech that is characterized by cursing and hatred towards those whom God has called him to bless. In the biblical paradigm, Jesus operates from such a thing is unthinkable. Just as it is nonsensical for a follower of Jesus to bless a brother or sister in need without providing them with the things they need for their bodies. Integrity. To live without integrity, to bless God and curse men, is to live without true faith. It's to be double-minded. The maturity that God is working in his people demands consistency between our belief in our action, our faith in our works. And in these verses, James calls us, his readers, to this integrity in their speech. So not taking up the weapon of the worldly tongue as we fight these battles. As we remain dissidents. A dissident, by definition, is someone who opposes the tyrannical authoritarian rule that is over them. Go home and fill in the details for yourself. Anybody have a comment about any of that? Go home and watch Hotel Rwanda. Look for the radio and the inciting of language, and then see how it turns into this contagion of violence, where they actually wiped out people in the same country. Anybody? Yes.
I always struggle with